right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
And welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us another week. Things have been pretty hectic, so we do apologize for the erratic schedule. However, we have a lot to talk about today, and by a lot, we mean Baldur's Gate 3, which Tortuga and I cannot get enough of. And when was the last time a co-op game grasped us like this? Halo Reach?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Maybe.
But when's the last time a video game came out and was good with minimal issues at launch?
When was the last time a game was released complete without a day one patch?
Yeah.
No microtransactions. There's no microtransactions game.
None whatsoever. Nothing yet, anyways. Yeah, minimal issues. Footnote, you know, we switched over to Steam. We originally had it on GOG. We had so many issues with the GOG version of Baldur's Gate, and then we switched over to Steam and all those issues were non-existent. So something with how GOG is handling the back-end connections just wasn't working too well. So for those listening, our experience is specifically with the Steam version of Baldur's Gate 3. And let me tell you, they knocked it out of the park. It's not even in the same city anymore. They did such a good job with this project. And all I can say is thank you to Larian Studios for making what seems to be a masterpiece at this point. Both you and I are both in the second act of the game, and it's been fabulous. Thus far, nothing but praise. Everything I've seen online has been nothing but praise. Baldur's Gate has achieved essentially the impossible, meaning as soon as it came out, game was out a couple of days, and they were already the number one game on Metacritic, which is just a platform used where people can go vote on what they think about a game, and it's supposed to be the reflection of what the public thinks of a game and not necessarily what paid critics think. Similar to Rotten Tomatoes is for movies. And they beat every game that came out in 2023. They beat Tears of the Kingdom. They beat Hogwarts Legacy, two games that received nothing but praise when they launched. And then this game, out of nowhere, D&D based, just 1%, 1 point over Tears of the Kingdom, which got 96 points in this platform. And Baldur's Gate 3 got 93 out of 100. So clearly they are being praised left and right in every aspect that you can think of when it comes to video games. I don't know, man. It's just, my heart is full. They did a very good job with this.
Like, that's an understatement on the amount of praise and effort that you see. Like, it is literally a complete package. It reminds me of the era of PlayStation 2 or PS, even the sixth gen, PS3 and Xbox 360, when DLC was just starting to become a thing with like Call of Duty maps or Gears maps or Halo DLC with Halo 3 and Halo Reach. It was, the game came out and it was just in such a solid state where there was very minimal tweaks needed. Now, there have been hot fixes since. I think they put out like 5 hot fixes addressing hundreds of minor bugs and tweaks, things along those lines. And there are more still planned. But even without those, the experience that I personally have had in my own playthrough and even a co-op playthrough I'm doing with Duga, there have just been minimal issues. I think the game has crashed for me about 5 times overall. And it's a massive game. So, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened, but it happened. All I do is just restart the game immediately. Like, I'm not trying to waste any time here. And we're looking at this from a total perspective. We're looking at the world itself, the graphics, the dialogue, the choices, the consequence, the combat mechanics, the combat spells. It's just such a complete package, which actually has caused quite a controversy online. Not sure if you caught any of it, but there were things about people talking about that Baldur's Gate success is a fluke for a number of reasons. That while they do have experience as a developer, people are saying that they had over was it like 300 people developed the game, that they're being backed by a major IP, which is Wizards of the Coast with Dungeons and Dragons. And I don't think that's fully the case. Like, I don't think they were funded by Wizards of the Coast. If I'm not mistaken, they actually had to license the game out. So they had to put up capital to even start that process. And they didn't start hiring till way later. So development for Baldur's Gate 3 started somewhere around 2017. And here we are at full release with 3 years of early access in 2023. That's the standard life cycle of games, right? About 5 to 7 years. So people are actually putting the game down because of the development time, the amount of people required for the game. But that's your standard AAA game. So I'm actually very confused on where this controversy is coming from, where you see games like Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto has been going for 10 years under the Grand Theft Auto 5, mainly because of the multiplayer. But even if you look at their prior games, there were several years between releases. And it's for that same reason, you know, those are considered AAA games. It required the development time, resources. So 5 to 7 years is pretty standard. Like even Cyberpunk 2077 was teased in like 2013, 2014, something along those lines. And it didn't release till about 2020. So, you know, whatever issues it had, we're looking at the development cycle within there. It's pretty standard. So personally, I don't think any of the negative commentary against the game, about the game's development time, is appropriate because it seems pretty standard.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought it up. It seems like the people that have an issue with Baldur's Gate 3 tend to be more from a development standpoint, or how developers handle their games. The controversy that I've seen online is a lot of people do not want to basically raise the bar, so to speak, in the realm of RPG, right? A lot of people said the same thing when Elden Ring came out. You know, Elden Ring was a phenomenal game. Came out, blew everything that existed prior to it out of the water. It was a great game to be introduced into a Soulsborne game if you never played it before, like you and I. It was a fantastic game to play, even if you were a Soulsborne master or expert. In it, and you were still able to enjoy new lore, new weapons, new monsters, new combos, what have you. And it was just done beautifully. And a lot of people were saying the same thing at that time for Elden Ring, that, you know, this is just an anomaly. Don't think that this just raised the standard for Soulsborne games. And my question to that is, why not? If this is what's done, if this is the formula that was able to bring in new people, and also make it so that people that have played it before enjoyed it like none other, why isn't this the standard? Why can't this be now the bar that every Soulsborne games aims to achieve? I don't understand why people are against it, because it's difficult to create a full product, a clean product, a complete product. That just doesn't make any sense. So the same thing with Baldur's Gate 3 is the same concept. They created such a full package, such a clean copy of the game, to the point where not many major issues were happening. There were some bugs, obviously. That's the case with any new game. But it wasn't anything like when Cyberpunk came out and your game would crash after 10 seconds of loading into the game. Or you do anything and then your game crashes. The loads wouldn't happen. The things weren't rendering correctly, or a number of things that were happening widespread to anyone who owned a copy of the game. But here comes Baldur's Gate 3 in the world of RPG, and they just created such a fantastic game. And developers are the ones that are upset, saying, you can't expect this from us. And I think that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous doesn't even begin to touch it. It's like, oh, you want to hold us to a certain standard? Yeah, I don't think so. Right. Then that's not it. And it's actually funny that we're talking about this. I actually just came across a quick little article where PC Gamer actually did an interview with the Larian founder. I'm going to butcher this. Sven Vinke. Who basically weighed in on this particular debate in regards to, you know, the controversy of the success of the game and the development time that it took. And specifically over, you know, Baldur's Gate 3, quote unquote, raising the bar. And he basically said, you know, these are video games. Standards die every day. And that is a quote right there, because it's true. Like you wouldn't hold Grand Theft Auto 5 to the same standards of Grand Theft Auto 3, you know?
Sure.
The technology was dated back then, right? There's more you can do, voice acting, a whole number of things. And that's the thing. Games and processes are meant to evolve to become better. So yes, we are going to hold you accountable, because I know you're trying to make a profit, but you're not going to make a profit without us purchasing your product.
Right. And so it brings that like layer of conspiracy. My, what's it called? My special cap, my aluminum hat. Basically, there's this whole thing now, because Larian Studios made such a great game, you start to question, why are so many developers, if not all developers, making shit games every time? Everything that comes out garbage. And it makes you wonder if there's not like just this backroom deal saying, hey, we won't release completed games if you don't. That way we maximize on profits and we can start and we can actually release games that aren't complete, release it, get paid for it, and then slowly patch it up as time goes on. By then we've already made maximum profits. So why put in so much effort on the front end? And for years, you've heard us say it. Anyone who is a respectable game reviewer and not selling out and getting paid for reviews would tell you that games are not up to the standard as they used to be. It's been felt from everyone that's into gaming. Things just haven't been the same for a long time. Things are coming out incomplete almost always. And one of the biggest gripes or like pains that people have waiting for games to even come out is that fear, like thinking, man, I really want to play this game, but I really want it to work. And that's not something that we should be kind of hopeful for. That should be something that is there always by default. It should be expected that the game will work on whatever you buy it on. It shouldn't be all right, here we go. Let's see if this new Warzone map will actually load for me on the first try, or Battlefield, or whatever. Doesn't matter what the game is. Too many times, I'm like, just mentioning Battlefield. Remember Battlefield 2047 or 2042? The amount of bugs that came with that game, that was the epitome of, this isn't a bug, it's a feature, because you were able to do things that you couldn't even, your mind couldn't even fathom with just a crazy amount of bugs that were going on in that game. I think it's up to par or maybe even worse than what Cyberpunk laid out. And it's just things like that always happening in the gaming industry. And developers are like, whoopsie, well, thanks for your $60, $70, $80 now. We'll patch it up eventually. And then that's been the standard for so long, for so many years now, that it's such a breath of fresh air getting a game like Baldur's Gate to come out and just work from the start. Pixel and I have praised it from the beginning, just the multiplayer alone, the difference between doing it with GOG and Steam, of being able to just jump into a friend-only server and just jump into a game. Loading up that game even after the fact is so much easier in Steam than it was in GOG. And there's just not enough time in the world to give all the praise that this game deserves. I truly hope that this wins Game of the Year. On top of that, I truly hope that they win awards for things like, you know, storytelling, music, voice acting, what have you, like actual elements of the game and not just Game of the Year title. Because you can feel the amount of work and love and effort that they put into this game. I'm telling you, there's not enough praise that we can give into what Larian Studios were able to accomplish with this title. It's amazing. I mean, I could talk about it all day with just how impressed I am and other things. And we can even dive into things within the game that is impressive instead of just a massive overview. But Pixel and I try to not give out spoilers if it can be avoided. But it's just, man, if you haven't checked it out, at least watch somebody play it online. just so you can see what we're talking about. It won't do it justice watching it through stream, but it's, I feel like it's good enough that you'll still be able to capture the essence of Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, especially watch streams before you play the game, because I know if I watch someone stream right now, I'd be like, you're playing the game, even though right. everyone has their own adventure.
Exactly.
What are you doing? I'll be pulling whatever hair I have left out. Like, it's not going to work. There's just no way. But it is, you can watch some of the trailers that they've put out. You can definitely jump onto Twitch and see if you get an idea of what what the game is about. Essentially, you're playing a digital version of Dungeons and Dragons with a set story. So it's like Larian's the Dungeon Master, and they laid everything out for you. The multiple paths. As far as character creation, it's recommended you create your own custom character and class for your first playthrough. But there are 7 pre-made characters who are essentially NPCs that you can drag into your party throughout the game. And then just have fun with it. You have 3 difficulty settings. There's basically like an easy mode, a balanced mode, and then there the hardest mode, which is labeled as tactical. We've only touched on balance, and I have been getting tossed around like a rag doll in balance.
Yeah, I've been getting served left and right. Every single time I think I reach the power spike where I can take on anything, Baldur's Gate 3 humbles me right back down to earth. It does not miss. And I just want to make a quick note on the NPC. If you do choose to play as a pre-made character, do note that each character that's pre-made, they have already an established kind of part in the world. So they have a lore, they have backstory, they have people that they already know and are trying to get back home to, things like that. They have a pre-established just everything. So if you play as that character, just know that certain dialogues are going to talk about things like that, that you yourself may not know anything about, and you're learning it as you go while you're playing this this NPC, this pre-made character, which may be relevant. So that's another reason why they say just play the game with an original character that you created. And that way you can experience from the outside looking in, their backstories like evolve. And as you start exploring those options, and then on your second playthrough, you can be that person, and then you can see it from their perspective as you try to accomplish your goals. Cause you don't really know your goals, right away. When you pick the pre-made character. So it's just one of those things to be wary about. Just know that it's there. It's your game's your choice, but this is something that I would like to, I would be very confused if options are popping up that I have no clue what they're going on about, only because you don't know. It's not like you can read up on what that character is going to go through throughout the game.
Exactly. And that's the most important thing here, is that it is your adventure ultimately. I have basically created a new game for every class that I would like to try it out eventually. Yeah, like I have, like I did the prologue, like everyone's basically on land right now. The only ones that I will probably never make are going to be rogue and fight. I think everything else is fun. Because like, even if you take a look at the wizard class has like 5 or 6 subclasses that give you different spells that are going to have different playthrough. The most common one is the evocation class, where it's basically spells that damage. There's a transmutation class, mainly for summons. There's abjuration. And I think that one's for like buffs and debuffs on the battlefield to help your teammates. So that right there can literally be, 5 playthroughs just under the wizard class. So then there's just so much. Like, if there is DLC for this game, it'll be very interesting to see how they implement it. But even so, on and off between those characters, I think I'm somewhere around like 50 hours, with the most amount of hours being on my first character, my main character, which is Dragonborn Paladin. And I'm having fun. I like where my story has taken me. The Paladin class is a little more rigid than I would have liked. I remember in early access, I played the Paladin, and I actually got a cutscene for the Oathbreaker.
Nice.
Yeah, because I did a couple of boobs.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they added that for the Paladin class, because that is an avenue that you can explore when you play D&D in real life, and you have a Paladin, and you as the Dungeon Master see that your Paladin is just doing some things that perhaps their god would not support, right? They're supposed to stand for all good things, not every god, but in this example, the Paladin is supposed to stand for all good things, all that is right, and they're over here stealing and robbing or whatever the case is. After so many strikes, you tell them like, hey, you are now an Oathbreaker. You know, that connection that you once had with your god, you feel that that's been pulled, and these are now your new stats. And Oathbreakers get some interesting abilities, mostly on the darker side of things, like dealing with undead, creating undead, more demonic kind of like things, as opposed to being a holy justice warrior. Now you're this king of undead kind of feel. So it's just a tool that DMs had in their back pocket, not necessarily to keep the Paladins in line, you know, let them play how they want to play. But this is an avenue to approach, to explore when they start getting out of the left and right limits of their oath that they have to their god. So, and it's cool that they added it to the game. Same concept. Once you start doing some pretty nasty things, it's like, hey, you know, that connection that you had with your god, it's being challenged. You're now an Oathbreaker. And in Baldur's Gate 3, they do have a system in place that even though you became an Oathbreaker, you can take steps to kind of get back into the good graces of your god and be whatever type of Paladin you were before. So there are things that if that were to happen, that you kind of like, now that's kind of like your motivation to try to get in the good graces of your god, which I think it's awesome to have that as well.
Yeah, I didn't get to explore it that far. I actually went Oath of Vengeance in time, so I could not be as, like I mentioned, rigid earlier. It mainly falls under do what you got to do to reach the goal.
Sure.
Which works great for the first playthrough, so you can see how it goes. I love how the dice are in the game, right? The dice still play a major part in the game, just like it does on the tabletop, especially when you look at things like lockpicking or, you know, persuasion, deception, intimidation, and dialogue. Let me tell you, I cannot tell you how many times a modifier has saved my ass. Either just hitting the target roll or the modifier bringing me one above.
Right.
It's also cursed me the other way for sure. I have gotten into many encounters failing a roll,
which I think is awesome. That's another element to this game, right? That you don't really get to see in other games. For example, Mass Effect, the trilogy. That's not really a thing. Granted, the dialogue options that you choose in that type of game would kind of navigate if you're going to befriend this person in front of you or fight them, right? But it's not left to the roll of a dice like it is in Baldur's Gate 3. You still pick the dialogue option that best fits what you want to say. And then in most cases, you'll get a chance to see how that lands on the person that you're talking to. And, you know, think of it from a development standpoint. They now have to program responses for multiple outcomes. And then you take it on that way. Do they allow you to speak one more time to try another type of persuasion or intimidation or whatever? Or are they immediately triggered into combat because what you said pushed them over the edge and now they have to take you out? Because let me tell you, so in my main playthrough, I made a half orc monk just to pay homage to one of the first characters I ever made as a player, right? And it's been so much fun. I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to make a monk. I wasn't too sure on what race to go with, but I saw half orc and started playing around with the settings. I'm like, I'm all in. This is too awesome. And let me tell you, I have quite possibly made the worst choices in the game. But I'm playing the game. I'm the type of person that however the dice falls, that's what I'm going with. I'm not going to save beforehand. And if I don't get what I want, reload and then until I get the positive outcome. that you could potentially have in this situation. If I rolled a one and pissed off the person I'm talking to and they want to fight me, then that's the route I'm taking. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit here and try to kind of jimmy rig the game, so to speak, to just get these different outcomes that I think are more favorable to the story. And I've chosen things and things just didn't land in my favor to the point where I've made the game so much more difficult. I'm in act two and everyone wants to kill me.
That's unfortunate. I did not take that particular route. Actually, no, that's a lie. There have been instances where I have saved for making a decision. And there are times where I just kind of let it go. So mine has been mixed. But I'm not gonna lie, I definitely have. If I didn't like how an encounter went, I definitely have like load that save.
Yeah, I mean, and that's your prerogative, right? You it's your game, and you didn't like the way something ended up. You for sure, it's not a jab at anyone that does that. It's just that's not something that I've ever done in any game, and I don't see a reason to start doing that now. And I also feel that it makes it so that when I do play the next time, I leave those opportunities and options open, so that when I see it for the first time, those are genuine experiences for that character, right? Because depending on what you have, your race in your class and along other things also creates what dialogue options you have. Some dialogue options are locked out. You don't even know they're there unless you're a druid or unless you're a cleric or unless whatever. If you have a certain spell at your disposal, it'll come up as options sometimes. And you don't know they're there unless your character already has that available to them at that moment. I mean, I always pick what is unique to that character in those dialogue moments, even though that may not necessarily be what I would have chosen if that wasn't there. But if something comes up that says, you know, this is a monk answer or this is a half-orc answer or response, I always choose it. And it's just always funny because they now have a unique response back to that line that you would not have gotten if you didn't have that at part of your character, which I think is awesome. So it opens up with every character you have dialogue with. Next time I'll make a tiefling sorcerer, we'll say. And now this character is going to have options that I would only get if I had chosen a tiefling or a sorcerer on my previous playthrough. And I think that's so awesome. And it makes every playthrough incredibly unique and just special to that character, because those are only options that that character would receive. And I think that's awesome. So it's just, this is the level of detail and amount of work and love that Larian Studios put into Baldur's Gate 3. And it's incredibly apparent every time those things pop up here and there. And they're not too common. It's not like every character or every NPC you talk to has a special dialogue. It's maybe one out of every 30, 25 around there that you'll have a unique thing that you can say because of your class or race.
No, we had an encounter where we met a group of druids, and there was someone by the beach that needed assistance. And this NPC didn't make it and kind of cut something off for us moving forward that we both experienced in our own playthroughs. So very curious to see how that's going to play out. I don't think it's the end of the world.
The game is not contingent on this character, but it's like Pixel saying, if we would have saved this one character, which we both did individually in our single player playthroughs, which unlocks an introduction to another character, which is then helpful later down the road. So that's basically the domino effect that we got in our original playthrough. And then in our multiplayer playthrough, we weren't able to save this individual, which means we now don't get the introduction to this other individual, which helps us later down the road. So when we get to that point, is that individual still going to help us out, or are they going to, do they have a program where they don't even intervene now because we didn't help their friend prior to that fact? So it's going to be a incredibly curious fork in the road when we get there, because like you said, we both got that one version of how that could have went in our individual playthroughs. And this is what I'm telling you. Every time you play this game, you're going to get a different experience. The overall gist of things will be the same, right? You still have the same bad guys. You still have to take down the same monsters. You still have to do things in a specific order to unlock the next part. Like, that's not going to change. But who's going to help you? Who's going to be in your pocket? Who's going to be after you, right? Because you could make an enemy of everyone, both the druids and the tieflings in the beginning. You can also make them both allies instead of one versus the other. You can make the druids the only allies and screw the tieflings, or vice versa. There's, you know, multiple ways that you can split that kind of pie. So it's just, man, the amount of work. And I know, reading through the achievements, that saving the tieflings gives you just, that's one of the achievements of choosing to save the tieflings every chance that you get throughout the game. So I'm aiming for that for now, but I don't know if I'm going to give them the same chance on my second playthrough.
I don't blame you at all. There's so many things I'm going to do different. I'm prepping to make a character who's just going to be a total dickwad.
100%.
I just don't know what class. I might make it a barbarian, because I know I'm probably going to have to fight a lot. So I need to be ready.
you're not wrong. And honestly, it's funny because the way they lay things out, they usually have like the super preppy, like happy-go-lucky option, like the first option. And then as you go down, they tend to get more and more serious. Some of them are aloof towards the middle. And then you get the last one that's like, why are you talking to me about this? I don't give a shit. Figure it out. You figure it out, or pay me. You know, things like that. They do not give the NPC the time of day, and it's definitely the backhand responses that, you know, I choose them depending on who I'm talking to. But for the most part, not really. There's some NPCs I've come across that it's always the last option. It's like, go fuck yourself. I'm over this conversation, and I'm talking about Molo specifically. This game is good. I don't know if you saw that there has been a speed run record already for Baldur's Gate 3.
I've seen a couple. So what is yours? What speed run have you seen? I think I've seen two.
So it's being labeled as a speed run, but I will put in the caveat now that I don't consider this a true speed run of Baldur's Gate 3. And let me explain what I mean. So there's a guy who beat the game in 10 minutes. And basically, he chose Gale, which is one of the pre-made characters that you can pick who can be an NPC if you make your own character that can end up in your party. And he's a wizard. And I'm not going to give too much about Gale and his story. But basically, if you pick Gale as your main character and you complete his individual story, you can do that within 10 minutes, and that causes you to end the game. You get the end credits because of it. But you didn't truly beat the game by doing all of the acts that are in the game. You just completed Gale's storyline. So I don't consider that a true speed run. I'm sorry.
So I'm a little confused, because Act 2 is not exactly short. Or, you know, Act 1 and 2.
I mean, I'm not going to give too much, but Gale's personal story has nothing to do with the rest of the game.
Okay, never mind then. So that's fine
in a way, but he's completing his own story, and that's completing the game.
Gotcha. Okay. That's funny.
So I don't consider that a true speedrun. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. You beat the game in the sense that you got to the end credits in 10 minutes. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. You can have that. Cool. But you didn't beat the game. And you're not gonna convince me that you did.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because that same speedrunner did another speedrun, which I don't know if you saw, but instead of beating the game, it's now, instead of like any percent, it's now a sex percent. It's now an official speedrun category. How fast can you have sex with someone?
Ridiculous.
And I think that's around 8 minutes with Zal.
That's so funny. Yeah, I don't think, without glitches, I don't think Baldur's Gate is going to be a speedrun type of game. I don't see that happening. I don't think it's designed to be completed that fast. It's almost impossible to get to certain acts without triggering combat. And if you're not leveling appropriately, there's almost no way that you would succeed in those encounters, because it's left up to too much chance, right? You can't force outcomes like you can in certain games when you speedrun. This is always a roll of the dice. So I'd be curious to see if someone actually figures out, maybe there's a secret like path to certain things, right? That no one's discovered so far. That'll let you jump between acts.
I did. So I don't know about that. I don't know about between acts, but I mean, technically, what do you have to do? You just have to run around. What's the force encounters? What do you have in act one? You have those.
You have the Elder Brain. The Elder Brain. The intellect devourers. The druids is avoidable.
Is it?
Oh, with the goblins? Yeah, right. No, that's forced. But it's exactly. Avoidable in the sense that you don't even deal with the druid camp.
Exactly. So you have that encounter. And then you move up.
That you can technically avoid.
Yep. And then there's the Githyanki. And then the next area is right there. So, I mean, in reality, I think it's doable. You'd just be super low level to encounter.
You'd be super low level. It's curious. Will your characters know what they're looking for in the next areas? Because that's the other thing. Some things don't even pop up on your map. But I guess if you're speedrunning, that doesn't matter. But you wouldn't even know about to look for certain things because you didn't learn about it yet from the first area. But I guess if you already have that knowledge where certain things are, I mean, maybe. But again, I don't. It would still be a couple hours.
No, indeed.
We're both in Act Two, right? I'm almost into Act Three. I'm almost to the point where I can access Baldur's Gate. I have a pretty big boss fight. In fact, the first true boss fight of the three antagonists. And it's kicking my ass because I'm underleveled. But once I get through that, then I think that I'll finally be able to reach Baldur's Gate, the city.
That's pretty awesome. I am somewhere in Act Two, and holy bejesus, am I lost? I'm still having fun overall. There's like a couple different paths that I have to take in my thing. Where was I going to go? Something that I did see, which I'm actually kind of hopeful for, is that there is certain. I don't want to say DLC, but there's going to be an update where you are going to be able to remake your character appearance in the future. That's something that Larian is currently working on. Give you the option to, essentially remake your looks or whatever. Oh, you know, one of the biggest gripes I told you that I had was with the Dragonborn, right? Where you selected your Dragonborn type, which was associated with a particular type of Dragonborn skin. It doesn't matter in Baldur's Gate. There is a way right in the character creator when you're selecting, you know, whatever limited colors they give you, you can select like show all colors. So you can be any color Dragonborn with your preferred dragon breath type.
Oh, that's pretty neat. I didn't know that.
So there's two things that I saw that I don't want to see. I don't think they're spoilers. But essentially, if you are a druid, apparently there are like certain like very small crevices where you can transform into a cat. So if it's locked, you can bypass the area through like a little burrow and like come out the other side. Also, if you're still in your cat transformation mode, you can jump through certain bars. Like that's as a cat, you go through. And the other thing that someone discovered, which I don't know how. I don't know if it's a particular spell or it's a pet or what it is, but essentially you can one-hit kill anything in the game. If you put an owlbear on a high enough surface and have them use one of their abilities, which is like flight drop or something like that, if they are high enough, you can end up doing like thousands of damage to whatever your target is.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I know as a druid you can turn into an owlbear, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you need something specific to do that, but yeah, that's always the case when people play any video game. They always figure out how to push things to the extreme, and that's definitely one way to do it, which is awesome because they're playing the game as it was created, and I think it's creative for them to figure things out like this. Like, I don't know if you saw the clip of Matt Mercer playing Baldur's Gate 3 with the creator, Sven, watching him, right? And commenting on this. He's in Baldur's Gate and he's trying to get basically to like this walled off castled like type area
Is that the one with the crates?
Yes. He can't do it. You can't just walk there or climb the walls or whatever. So Matt Mercer, being Matt Mercer, figures out a creative way to not necessarily break the game, but to get to his end goal, right? Which is to get into this castle type place. And he stocks up with almost, I think it was like 50 or 60 boxes or something crazy in his character's inventory. And he just piles them up. And as he piles it up, he jumps onto it, then piles the other side. And he does this back and forth thing until he gets high enough to use a teleportation type arrow, where now his character teleports to where he wants it because he's high enough to shoot it on that surface. And Sven just looked at it. He was like, that's one way to play the game. And it was just, you know, there's no right and wrong. And it just, you're limited by your level of creativity. But it's just so funny that that's in the game. It's perfectly allowed to make happen. And it's just so comical. And I'm glad I watched that clip because I've done a similar thing, not to the extreme of like 60 crates up to do whatever, but I've done it about 5 or 6 crates to get to a ledge that I couldn't get to because I accidentally blew up the ladder that I needed to get to the top of something. So I made my own ladder. So thanks, Matt Mercer.
I am crying. That is actually hilarious. Yep. There's been things that I've been able to jump because I found a elixir of strength, which I like maxed out my strength, and it was a pretty considerable increase in my jump, and it just made my life so much easier for this particular area.
Yeah, it's so cool, just the amount of, and there's things in this game that I've never actually seen or even read about in D&D, like, you know, certain weapons, the way that they handle equipment in general. Instead of, you know, what I'm used to seeing in D&D from the various books, they've done a type of system where these items put it like the ability for you to cast certain spells that you normally wouldn't have access to into as an option for your character to do. And it could be pretty random, right? It could be just these gloves of whatever. And then with the gloves comes this enchantment that you're able to cast Burning Hands now. Because of these gloves or invisibility or whatever, any number of spells, depending, you know, that could come attached with these boots. And in D&D, you do have that to an extent. Like you have a wand of fireball, wand of magic missile, and then you have certain staffs and whatever that you can get certain spells from beyond that. But Baldur's Gate 3 basically just almost always assigns a spell to any of the better type gear, which I think is pretty neat. And it's accessible to anyone who equips it. Whereas in D&D, it's usually limited to classes that can cast it unless it says otherwise.
There's a short sword that you gave me in one of the campaigns that we ended up playing with tabletop. Was it short sword of warning?
Warning. Yeah.
Warning. This is the one. So it's really interesting because in the tabletop, I think a lot of those magical items kind of act on their own, especially like that one. So it is interesting to see. So, you know, theoretically, your helmet can grant you a spell, your armor mm-hmm. can grant you a spell, your gloves can grant you a spell, and then your boots can grant you a spell. So I have one where I think it is actually Burning Hands or Scorching Ray on my gloves. And then I have Flight. Is it Flight or is it Misty Step? I think it's Misty Step in one of my boots. And then the helmet gave me like Detect Thoughts or something. So it is pretty interesting to see what abilities you can get, because it's not just spells. Like there's certain weapons that'll give you access to like different class actions. So let's say if you're using a sword that has, lacerate, right? Where you cause your opponent to bleed. You might lose it on that one, but you'll put on a stronger weapon and you'll get a rush attack and cleave and, I don't know, another, like a different attack option with that particular weapon. So things like that is really, really interesting to see how customizable the attire is. Well, not just from looks, but how it's going to affect you. And luckily, it's not too complicated because the only one you really have to worry about is your main armor, because that's the one that's going to have your default armor class, which I thought was cool. And then the weapons are pretty self-explanatory with how much damage you can potentially, if you succeed on attack.
Right. Yeah, they did an amazing job with making it feel like D&D. They still took a lot of creative freedom with things, but I think they made the right call. I mean, the ones that come to mind, aside from the way they handle magic weapons and things like that, which again, completely fine, because in Baldur's Gate 3, the magical weapons are swapped out and thrown away at a much faster rate than you would in an actual campaign, right? You're not gonna throw away your +1 short sword that fast, right? Because those items come at the speed of your dungeon master, and so it's not gonna be in the same amount that you get in Baldur's Gate 3. I can't tell you the number of times I've upgraded my long swords between great axes and great swords back and forth. Every other fight, it would be an upgrade, especially in Act 1. So, which I think is fantastic. In other areas where they took creative rights, adding the owlbear as an option for druids to turn into and to turn or to speak with animals. That's not conventional in Dungeons and Dragons because owlbears are technically monstrosities and speak with animals only works on beasts. So, I mean, if you have a DM that rules it aloud, then, you know, whatever, but it by default, that's not the case. And in Baldur's Gate 3, they're like, nah, we don't care about that. It looks like an animal. We're going to treat you like an animal. And that's the route that they went, which I think is awesome. And the other thing that I'm loving, and this is actually a note to what you said earlier in the beginning of the episode of people thinking that Wizards of the Coast fronted this project. One of the big things that Wizards of the Coast did while they were involved, they basically had to give the, you know, stamp of approval that Larian Studios wasn't straying too far from the pre-written lore, you know, for all the gods, for all the antagonists, for all the cities, the spells, and just anything, any level of lore. Because if there's anything Wizards of the Coast has out of all of their IP, it's a shit ton of lore. Because we're talking about since the 70s until now, over 50 years of documentation, always updating and being added to, that Larian Studios was able to tap into and create this world for us to enjoy. But there, like I said, there's some elements that they took some creative freedoms. And if you're the type of person that is like, I'm not going to play this unless it's absolutely exactly like D&D at my table, this game isn't for you. It has 90% of the elements of D&D, and the rest of it, you know, a lot of it actually overlaps with making it feel like a video game, which I think they did a fantastic job doing it. My biggest gripe was the point and click system, because I've never played a game where that was how you moved your character outside from League of Legends. But I got used to it pretty fast, and now I can't really see how you can play this game without the point and click system. So I don't know, just another note from my experience on this game.
So actually pretty funny that you mentioned that particularly. I actually tried the controller, and the controller support is actually really well done. And then I just saw literally as we were talking here, there is currently a mod that's out there that lets you control it like an MMO using WA as huh? if that is your cup of tea. If you mess with mods, it is something that is currently available. I like the point and click. I think it helps me navigate better since I'm using the mouse so much to zoom in and zoom out anyway. I just analyze the field a lot better. One thing that I don't utilize as much as I would like to, tactical mode.
Yeah. I've done it a few times. So every time we do the goblins part, I go into tactical mode because it's such a big arena with so many players to keep track of. So tactical mode helps there. But it gets confusing sometimes if there's a lot of different elevations at play. So tactical mode could be a hindrance at that point because you can't really gauge, you know, the elevations, which is a mechanic that doesn't exist in actual D&D unless you just have some math nerd as your dungeon master that tries to figure out the hot pot news of everything. Whereas in Baldur's Gate 3, it actually plays a part of figuring out how this affects your shot. It can either improve your chances of hitting because you're at a higher elevation than the person you're aiming at, or decrease your chances of hitting because you're at a lower elevation. So therefore you have less of a surface area to be able to hit, which makes sense. You know, that's how it works in real life. But when you're playing tabletop, you're not trying to figure out how much of the body is being blocked by the edge of the cliff because you're this close to the cliff and this person's this high up from the ground. How much is being blocked? That's, come on. No one has time for that.
Exactly. That's definitely something. It's like, what do you mean it's interrupted? Like, I can see you right through this guy. It's like the tip of a rock that's going to take your fireball and knock it to oblivion.
Yeah, which I think is awesome, right? It brings certain elements you can't even get into at a tabletop, you know, in a table game. You could, but it would slow down the experience. Tabletop D&D is slowed down by so many things already. Adding more things, adding real life physics into it is only going to make that experience a lot worse, in my opinion. Some people might be all for it and they already have a system in place and they know, you know, all that stuff and they have that figured out. But I personally don't see the value in doing that. It's either going to be a hit or miss and then we'll move on with our day.
Exactly. I'm having so much fun in that game. It's kind of weird because one class that I didn't think I would enjoy as much as I am is actually the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. It's something so satisfying about being right in front of them. You know, we had an encounter in our co-op game where unfortunately we didn't succeed against some gnoll. But I ended up taking out, three out of four. As a team was slowly dying, and I honestly thought I was gonna make it. It was just like I was down to my last.
Yeah, you both were down to less than in single digit hit points. You and the last null. I remember that. Man, just so you guys know, I am reckless. We'll say in our co-op playthrough, I have caused so much mayhem, and not even intentionally. It's gotten to the point where my intrusive thoughts have no boundaries and I let them win every time. Whereas in my single player playthrough, I kind of want the best outcome that I can manage for my character without manipulating it too much. But in the co-op playthrough, it's like, I don't give a shit if this NPC hates me. Let me see if they'll let me punch them and be okay with it. And then and it's been fun.
All right. So let me tell you what this man has done. Okay. This is one of those instances where we accepted the decision, right? I was forced to accept the decision and I was okay with it. Ultimately, I was okay with it. We did our thing, but you're in this druid camp and you're looking for a healer. So you're speaking to the healer's apprentice because the healer isn't there. And when you're introduced to her, she's healing a bird. And for some reason, after she revived the bird and she invited you to her office, as we're walking there, Tortuga hit the bird and ended up killing it, which immediately turned the entire camp against us. And we did the first half of the encounter in their office, but as we left to the main camp, it was too much for us. You're too low level. I don't even think we were fully healed.
No.
And it was chaos. We gave it like three attempts, I think. And it was straight up just not a good time.
And it was fun.
It was fun. It was hilarious how we got away with so much. But ultimately we were just too low level.
It was one of those things that absolutely there's going to be consequences to your actions. And honestly, I'm not going to lie, I didn't think that killing the bird was going to cause the entire camp to want to kill us. I knew that I ran the risk of pissing off the healer that we were going to talk to, but I didn't think the entire camp would turn on us. Do I regret what I did? Absolutely not. For whatever reason, I saw this stupid bird that was delaying the reason she didn't want to see us. She was like, I'm healing this bird and you're going to have to wait. I'm like, I have to wait. So I killed the bird. I took care of the situation, right? Now she doesn't have to deal with that. But apparently that was bad and the entire Druid Grove murdered us. So that was fun.
It was basically the risk I took was calculated, but man, I'm bad at math.
Fact. Honestly, who would think that killing the bird would make the entire grove go against you? I can understand being mad and kicking me out, but to straight up just go murder me? Come on. That's excessive.
That's excessive. Yeah, you forget that the birds can talk. I think you forgot that minor thing.
To the druids, whatever. That was like probably someone's best friend. I get it. But come on. I don't know. I mean, it was fun. But then, like I said, we try to keep that consequence, but we couldn't continue the story anymore. We could not take on all those druids after that happened. It was just, there's just way too many of them. So yeah, that's one of the things that we did revert back, and we didn't trigger that the second time because there was no way to continue the game otherwise. Or else, like I said, we would have kept it. We would have been enemies of the druids, and that just would have been it.
If there was a way to farm XP, we can come back properly. I would have kept
it. Yeah.
Like I what?
I said yeah.
Yeah. It's just there's just no way. And it's not that kind of RPG game. Like you really have to what do you got XP for? I don't think
exploration.
You get XP for conversation, exploration and combat and
advancing anyone's quest. If you advance it in any kind of way, you get experience for it.
Okay. Yeah, it was just too much. We have so much to do in that game. It's crazy. I did also
see something. We're not even halfway through.
Yeah. If you are interested in the game, remember we are currently running a giveaway for the PC version on Steam. So check that out. Check out the Twitter. The X. Right? I don't follow Twitter anymore.
Yeah, I'm calling it Twitter.
Check out the social media. We are running that campaign for a giveaway. One of the founders did say that if you do jump into the game, that first act, consider it a complete tutorial, which is insane because I spent a lot of hours in that first act because there is a lot to do.
Yeah, and there is a learning curve. If you've never played this kind of game, which I've never played this kind of game, there is a learning curve on figuring out how to navigate the game in general. Because the point and click system is interesting. You click where you want your character to go. You can move the camera off screen away from your characters and then click somewhere and they'll eventually get to that area. Which is an interesting kind way of playing the game that I've never had before outside of like RTSs where you want to move your squad to a certain area. So you scroll the map to that area and then you press A or X or whatever. And the squad will then go there to defend that point or harvest whatever. That's the only time I've ever had that, not for an RPG. So it's still interesting. Like it's not a part of my brain that I've trained before ever in gaming. So it always catches me off guard that's a thing, but you kind of get over it pretty quickly once you get used to it. But yeah, no, I agree. The act one is definitely it's not a tutorial, but I get why they're saying that. There's enough things in there and it's a little more happy-go-lucky than act two. That's for sure.
No, that is for sure. And like, finding stuff or going somewhere that you're not supposed to will humble you. If you think you are good at game, will humble you. Let me tell you.
My biggest complaint, and it's by design, obviously, is the lack of traders that I've come across. I'm sure that'll go away once you actually get to Baldur's Gate and you can actually go to merchants galore. But having to hoard all your items until you find a trader. Now I know you have the option to leave everything in the chest that's at camp. But that feels like cheating and I'm not doing that. I hoard everything until everyone's to the precipice of encumbered and I try to find a trader at that point. That's just me. And it's just, that's one of my biggest complaints is the lack of trading so far.
That's interesting. I think you can trade with more people than you think.
I did realize the other day, after almost 60 hours of playing, that you can hit the trade button with NPCs that you're talking to. And I did not realize that.
Dumb.
Yeah, at the bottom, there's buttons in dialogue. One of them is trade if that open to that character. However, by the time I've discovered this, like I said earlier, I made some choices where everyone in Act 2 wants to kill me. There's not a single NPC that'll talk to me. As soon as they see me, combat starts.
That is insane. I'm not going to lie.
I have made choices, all right? And I am sticking to it. I'm actually very unhappy with the choices that I made. I thought that I was going to get a different outcome. And then the next cutscene happened and I was incredibly upset with the outcome. And I'm like, screw it. I chose it. This is what I'm going to get. I am not happy with how it happened. Once you get to that part, I'd be happy to tell you, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I have made choices. That's the best that I can say. But man, was it the wrong choice?
Ryan, I am very curious. Very curious.
Yeah, you're not there yet. Because you went a different route, which I really want to explore the thing that you did, because it's just fascinating that this game is incredibly not linear. There's no one direct way to play this game. It's exactly like Hogwarts Legacy, where you get bombarded with all of these quests and options that you can explore. And that's exactly how you play the game. You navigate it the way that you want to. And then you slowly advance the story after you do certain things. And it's the exact same thing. Man, what a year this has been for gaming.
No, it's really true. We saw a picture where it's like, this is probably one of the most competitive game of the year contenders we have seen in a very long time. Yeah, because there's games that haven't even come out yet, right? There's a 2D Mario that's on its way.
Starfield, man. Starfield.
Starfield, I actually saw a website will be up soon, or it's up now, where you can actually get like a history course of the world of Starfield on the Starfield website to kind of prep you for some lore before you actually get the game. And I think Starfield has just gone.
That's cool. So they're right on target. I think it's supposed to come out around the beginning of September time
September frame. 6th, which I believe is the release date for the PS5 version of Baldur's.
Gotcha. Man. Yeah. What a year 2023 has been for gaming. And obviously a lot of that is the result of COVID. A lot of these projects, now that people are back in the office, and slowly migrating to how things were operating pre-COVID, things are coming through the pipeline a lot faster than those 3 years, which put a delay on so much. And we're now getting to the point where there's just too much to enjoy. There's only so many hours in the day, and they're all going to go to Baldur's Gate. But it's just, you know, it's crazy.
You are not wrong. Like, as soon as I can get my hands on a Steam Deck, I'm pretty positive I'm just going to pull the trigger. I just talked with Manny because I asked him what drone he has. And I was like, what am I doing spending money on a drone? Like, I just got a Steam Deck. That'll hold me over.
Exactly. I didn't want a Steam Deck until Baldur's Gate 3 came out.
I'm sorry about that, by the way.
Oh my, it didn't even occur to me that I can play this game on the go. Everywhere I go forever, I'm here for it. Let me tell you. However, it's a good thing you brought it up. Solarian Studios did say, be careful with this game because there's too much game and the Steam Deck is not a lot of hardware. So they have their recommended settings to play it, which is a lot lower than what you would get from playing on an actual PC. So they did say, you know, be careful with your settings because the Steam Deck isn't meant to handle that much game, but they have made it where the game will work within the settings are within certain thresholds. So definitely keep that in mind.
I don't even know what I have. But I wonder what kind of calculations are they accounting for in the on the Steam Deck?
Yeah, I think it's just there's just a lot of graphical processing that goes into Baldur's Gate. I think it has a lot to do with how the areas load as you're exploring. Because everything is technically there, but it doesn't necessarily render until your character is close by. I think a lot of that plays into how the Steam Deck renders the areas as you're traveling and exploring.
Yeah, no, that makes sense for sure. There's a lot, even from a structural standpoint, right? So if you're at the base, you can you'll only see like what your character can see. So if there's a room you haven't been in, then it's going to just be black. Like you'll see exactly what your character hasn't seen, right? So you like door, whatever. But it works the same way for stairs. Like the upstairs won't process for you unless you really play with the camera and like mount, or move your character to that particular.
Yep. Yeah. The field of vision that they have in this game is phenomenal. It's pretty cool. And luckily everyone in the party has dark vision. I don't know if I'll ever make a character that doesn't have dark vision, because that just would make the game harder than it has to be.
It's really not though. You just carry a torch.
And that's extra clicking. I mean, I guess you're right. But I could just have dark vision. How about that?
No, indeed. I hear you. I don't think my Dragonborn does.
I don't think Dragonborns do have dark vision. Yeah, we haven't, because we both made a Dragonborn in our co-op later. I don't think we've been anywhere dark yet.
Makes sense. All right, I think we should get to wrap up. So, Baldur's Gate is phenomenal. If you have the opportunity to play it, do that. There are a couple things that I'd like to touch on, kind of rapid fire. Rockstar Games, a couple days ago, purchased CFX.re, and that's a team behind roleplay and creator communities like 5M and Red M. They are now officially part of Rockstar Games.
Cool.
There was an announcement for The Last Ronin, which is a graphic novel of Teenage Ninja Turtles. So they're making a game based on that graphic novel. Real quick premise is out of the four turtles, one is alive and you don't know which. They've all fallen some way. And you're out to get revenge. And one of the things is that the last turtle uses the weapons of the other three along with. So I'm really curious. Yeah, it is pretty dark. I'm really curious to see what that's going to be like. I hope it plays like Batman, the Arkham trilogy, or God of War, because that combat, I think, would fit particularly well. There is a rumor that Starfield review codes next week. So that'll be interesting to see. And one more here. I'm trying to remember. Speaking of the Batman games, the Arkham trilogy is coming. I'm sorry, just came out on Nintendo Switch. If you were looking for another platform to play those. Apparently the Paladin in Baldur's Gate 3 is played class, which kind of...
Yeah, I saw that. I was very surprised by that.
And then there were several people who beat Baldur's Gate that first weekend that it came out.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, I think they put something out where it's about like 38, 40 hours to do the main campaign of Baldur's Gate. And completionists will probably take closer to 100.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's what it feels like. I'm close to 60 with both your game and my game combined. I'm still in Act 2, close to Act 3. I don't know how many acts are there. I think it's 5, I want to say. We'll see. We'll see if it's 5. I got to dive in to see if that's the case. But it is there's a lot. There's a lot to do. I can't see myself gun-hoing towards the end scene and credits that fast. Because the game kind of makes it makes me so curious on these personal backstories for all the NPCs that I've collected so far to join my crew. I want to see all their stories come to fruition. I don't want to skimp out on anyone. I want to see, you know, the everything go through how it's supposed to. Just to see things and complete them. I don't know. I can't see myself beating the game without seeing what happens to Shadowheart, Lazelle, Will, you know, Gale, and all these people. Asterion, I don't give a shit, but everyone else, I'm all for it.
Indeed. But that's all I had. If you guys have any questions, maybe we could start a campaign for the community. I don't know how that'll play out because of time, but you know, definitely something we're willing to explore. Maybe even stream hours if we can get some timing up. But yes, if you do have the opportunity, you want a fresh RPG, Baldur's Gate 3 definitely has the two guys one level stamp of approval.
I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah, maybe we can create an AI thing where Twitch plays Baldur's Gate.
That's going to be your expertise for sure. Why not?
I don't have time for that, but that'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool to see that. I mean, they already have included at launch that Twitch integration where your chat can select the dialogue for you.
Yeah, and it basically creates a poll of what the most chosen option is. And you don't have to choose that as a streamer, but it shows you what your chat would be interested in you choosing. So yeah, that's an interesting mechanic that they added, which is pretty neat. I haven't watched streams, but I know that for people with a large following like that, it's definitely a way to have an interactive experience with your community, which is pretty cool of Larian Studios to include.
No, absolutely. And then just one quick thing that I found pretty interesting is I saw a list of what the best early game party is. And it's your character as a paladin, the cleric, the rogue, and wizard.
Interesting.
One quick thing that I saw that I found absolutely amazing. Probably one of the few reasons, and I'm actually going to make a bard at some point, is apparently if you're around a lot of people and you make the bard play music,
you get
play
money.
Whatever, well, you can pickpocket everyone watching.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you still have to roll, right? Pickpocket, but it's apparently it's a way to make money in the game.
Honestly, that's pretty cool. I don't know if you saw the D&D movie. They had a very similar scene to that in the movie, which I thought was clever and pretty funny. That's impressive. I'm on board. I want to make a bard for that and for that only. Hilarious. Wow.
But yeah, that's going to be it for me. So we don't have an 8-hour.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Two Guys, One Baldur's Gate. Yeah, it was a long one, but it's rightfully so. There's so much to unpack. And we're going to talk about Baldur's Gate 3 for the foreseeable future until something replaces it as the top game, especially in our schedule. We really only have time to play so few games. I don't see anything outside of Baldur's Gate being played for a long, long time. But that said, definitely thank you all for hanging out with us yet another episode. Definitely let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter. You can also, I'm pretty sure I did my outro backwards, but you can also let us know what you thought of this episode, previous episodes, and what you would like for us to talk about any future episodes. Check the link in the description below. Again, there is a giveaway, so definitely check that out. That link should be open through our link tree now to give you a chance to win a copy of Baldur's Gate 3 Steam Edition. But yeah, so if you join that, good luck. Thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Until then.